Started as a whisper until you screamed it at the top of your lungs. We gained momentum. You made us unstoppable. We had a vision for change. You made it a revolution. We told you we are the future until you told us the future is now.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the premiere, the inaugural episode of PTB NXT, a chronological exploration of the Black and Gold brand. This is a new podcast to Place to Be Nation. Before I go any further, let me introduce my two cohorts on this journey. The Sonny and Cher of Place to Be Nation, Mrs. Jennifer Smith and Mr. Tim Capor. How you doing, guys?
I'm good, but who's who, though, in the Sonny and
Cher? I was going to let y'all pick.
We had the same, yeah. Same
I couldn't question. Decide.
Tim's definitely a Cher. What are you talking about? There's no question about it.
Yeah. What am I going to say?
It's kind of what I thought, but I don't want to, you know, assume anything.
Oh, we're off to a good start, Jacob.
Good. Always. So why don't we explain the concept behind this, since it is new. But basically what we are doing is going through NXT, not quite from the beginning, but probably the beginning as far as anybody wants to get into. So we're basically going to start with the lead up to the first takeover. But we're pretty much just going to go through NXT chronologically, in kind of like the PTB style, like many other podcasts have done with other promotions. And so with this episode, we will start with the January 1st, 2014 episode and the following episode, which is January 8th, 2014. Before we get into it, what is you guys like history with NXT? Like, have you guys always watched it? I know kind of everybody watches it now, but like in the past, like, when did you guys first become exposed to it?
Well, my story is a little bit interesting when it comes to my exposure to NXT initially, because it was at WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans. I had kind of last minute decided to go because I'd only been into wrestling for a little bit, like maybe 6 months. And then I had the opportunity to go to that weekend, and I ended up at TakeOver. And I was sitting with my friend, Nick Duke, and I watched my very first experience with NXT was live. So I just fell in love instantly. I remember loving Ember Moon and Shayna Baszler that night, but it was an amazing show, and it hooked me from then on when I started watching the weekly shows and every other show since then.
That's a great place to come in, Jenny, because right? I can tell you that takeover in New Orleans, its main event was my number two greatest WWE match of all time on our recently wrapped GWWE project.
The ladder match?
And no. The Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano.
Right. Yes.
Main event. Well, was it the main event there? Of course it was, right? That had to be the unsanctioned. So it was like they did the whole like the show is now officially over and this is an unsanctioned match. So right. Always love that move. But yeah, I mean honestly, I kind of wrestled with myself almost putting it as number one. Like, that's sort of where NXT is for me right now. Just in my wrestling fandom, that's sort of what it has become. But it certainly didn't start off as that. And I'm really interested to see like how that transition unfolds, because I can tell you, while I'm a very dedicated NXT fan and watcher of the weekly shows today, that's really more of a recent development within the past couple of years. Although it's, you know, it's always been on my radar. I remember when it launched in, gosh, 2010. It was like a weird sort of variety show.
It's like almost like a reality show. Like a,
Mm-hmm. It was like kind of like Tough Enough, but it was all in ring and almost in a studio setting. It's very bizarre. Like, and those episodes are on the network. So if folks are not familiar with the early days of NXT, totally different animal. And so they did a few seasons of that. It transitioned to, hey, now this will just be the kind of showcase program for our developmental system down in Florida. So that's what it became, I guess, in 2012. And it was just completely like not something I even thought about or watched beyond just an occasional clip or match here and there. And it really was not until that network era in 2014 and when the show came to the network that I was like, oh, okay, let me check this out. It's much more readily available. It's being promoted, pushed pretty hard. They've really got some good stuff here, and it's changed from really what it started with and even what it became during that sort of intermediate period between the reality show format and the network version. So yeah, we're starting at 2014, and this is going to be a lot of shows, a lot of characters, a lot of matches that I have never seen. So a lot of this will be new to me. Even if later on it's like, oh yeah, that's so and so, and now they're somebody else.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Tim. Like, I would say when it started on the network is really when it got onto my radar, but I can't say I was watching it like religiously at that point. I feel like, I don't know if this is the exact moment, but I feel like TakeOver Toronto, like that tag match, is like the match that really made me think like, wow, like NXT is something I need to be watching. But same, like where we're starting here, I cannot say, like, obviously I'm kind of familiar with the characters, but I can't say I remember these episodes of TV or anything. And I think especially for Jen, it will be interesting as somebody who kind of like, I think what most people would consider by TakeOver NOLA is like the prime of NXT, as somebody coming in there to see even where it was heading into the network era. Cause I think already we're going to see in these episodes that it's a different animal than even what we have today, even though it's only like 5 years ago.
Yeah. You think of today's NXT product, and I think everyone's kind of waiting for that other shoe to drop, for there to be a takeover that isn't completely awesome, you know, from end to end with like nothing short of like a 3-star match, you know what I mean? Where it's really that good, at least in my mind. And early takeovers were not that. And the product that we're going to be looking at, it's not that. It very much is their development system. It's Florida Championship Wrestling, basically, with a television show. And prior to the network, I guess, were these airing on Hulu? Is that where?
I think Hulu, and maybe on the website, maybe like on www.com, I feel like, maybe?
For a little bit, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's not like they had a TV deal or anything. It's not like you're watching this on USA or, I mean, they started on Sci-Fi, but that was only for that.
I guess, like, I didn't really think of that because I didn't know the history of NXT, so I just assumed it had always been on the network, like it started after the network started. So
yeah, I think it was the first takeover was the first thing they did on the network. But we'll get to it eventually. But
first
I think
real
it was
live.
Like, yeah, because the big thing was it was the first live wrestling on the network.
Oh, okay, cool.
But yeah. Anyway, that was kind of my whole idea with this was I thought it would be interesting to see. I'm a huge mark for like following things like chronologically and kind of tracking how things change. So.
No, you don't say. Just like every other wrestling fan I know.
Well,
Suds, Tim.
There's a little bit of that in me. I just probably don't have the attention span or the time or the patience necessarily for it all the time. I'll have little spurts of that where it's like, I won't go for years and years, but I'll watch like a year's worth of stuff. Just binge it really fast.
Well, you better get used to it quick.
Right.
I know. Yeah. We'll see. This will be my first of 12 episodes I do, and then you'll find a new co-host. No.
Yeah.
I have dirt on these two. That's how I got him.
Yeah.
Forced him into it. But anyway, what do you say we hop in?
All right. Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Like so our first episode is the New Year's Day 2014. What a time to be alive. Yeah. Episode of NXT. Our commentary team is William Regal, who I think needs no introduction. Mr. Mm-hmm. Tom Phillips, not Todd Phillips, like I originally put in my notes, the director of The Hangover. This is
Joker.
Tom Phillips, not Todd Phillips, and Alex Riley, who I have a feeling we'll get into later on, or at least I will, for better or for worse. Not a big fan of Mr. Riley so far in this journey. Yeah.
Can I go ahead and get us really off track and say that there's an adult performer currently named Alex Riley that I am a rather significantly large fan of, who does not look like this Alex Riley, but this Alex Riley does look like, which is not saying much because a lot of wrestlers do. I mean, have that look. But it definitely just hearing and seeing that name again was like, oh, this is causing a lot of complex feelings right now.
Well, his real name is actually Kevin Kiley. I did a little research. So Alex Riley's birth name, Kevin Kiley. So I don't know if that's also
maybe we try to stick with that to avoid any triggering names.
His shoot name.
But, you know, honestly, I'm glad you identified the commentators because it's more than this episode does. And yes. I was sort of struggling.
Aside from Regal, I kind of had to.
From Regal, everybody knows William Regal. But I was like, all right, am I listening to, I think it's Tom Phillips. I think it's Byron Saxon. Nope, not Byron Saxon. Oh, well, here's Byron Saxon later in the show. Oh, Alex Riley. That's right. He was a commentator. So I definitely struggled with that. I mean, Riley and Phillips to me pretty much sound totally interchangeable. And Regal was just really carrying this team. I'll go ahead and say it.
Even to the point where I couldn't tell if it was two guys or three guys. Regardless, I didn't know who the other one guy or two guys was. I mean, like, I was lost. Like, I didn't know it until tonight, right now, when you guys said their names. Like,
the only way I could catch on who Riley was is I figured out that he was the one that Regal kept roasting, like, constantly. And that's how I kind of caught on to who Riley was, because he was the one that Regal kept murdering, like, insulting.
He was so great in this episode, by the way.
I know. I have a ton of Regal quotes.
I'm so glad.
Okay, but anyway, our first match, Alexander Rusev versus Kofi Kingston. So Alexander Rusev, accompanied by his manager, Lana. So basically, Rusev, he really is from Bulgaria. Well, Alexander Rusev, I should say, still has a first name at this point.
You're allowed to have a first name in NXT.
Yeah. But basically, he and Lana are meant to imitate the Drago and I can't remember her name in Rocky IV.
Oh, yes. Lord. We're already at the Rocky comparisons. Come on now.
No, but I mean, like, there were
right,
literally
those tweets. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. But and then Lana is basically like, I feel like her background is like, I feel like she is just one of these. So her real name is CJ Perry. And I feel like she was like just somebody who was trying to make it in like any type of entertainment. Like I looked it up and she was in a girl group called No Means Yes. You take that for.
Oh, my God.
So shocked that didn't work out. But anyway.
No means yes.
No means yes.
Ooh. All right. Women's revolution, folks.
Yep. There won't be a movement for that. I promise.
And she. Did you notice when she came out, she started saying some word in Russian, like, repeatedly?
Yeah,
like,
the
it was like,
crowd's like, what? Nemanja!
Like, Nemanja! Did you?
Yeah. The what chants were awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, so the match, Rusev comes out. He hits a backbreaker. Kofi goes for a comeback. Kofi finally gets going, but he gets distracted by Lana. He falls, and then he gets hooked in the accolade. Very quick match, pretty much a squash. Kofi, at this point, I guess he was kind of like in the main roster, kind of like fog of like 2014 WWE, like just kind of like generally aimless, which I thought was interesting because he's like a main roster guy. And I noticed that on these shows, too, is they were bringing in like main roster guys, which I thought was an interesting thing to do. But pretty much a squash for the most part. I thought Rusev looked great besides his attire. His attire was very strange. It looked like a brown shower curtain.
It was bad.
That was
real bad.
Yep. Some kind of tarp or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
tarp. Yeah. I'm glad we were able to make this observation right out of the gate here because this is, I mean, something that you do with a developmental system, right? Is you take not only guys that you're essentially training, getting them ready for prime time, but taking some of those stars who, like you said, Jacob, they're kind of in the fog and the doldrums and moving them down there to, you know, help get these guys a little bit more seasoned or perhaps they need some more seasoning themselves. That certainly wouldn't be the case with a Kofi Kingston, but it's kind of the, you know, today's equivalent of leaving the territory for a little while at a time when we no longer have territories and have more of a monopolistic system nationally. So, yeah, it seems like that's what they're doing with Kofi here. I'm not exactly sure what he would have been doing on the main roster circa 2013, 2014. We're definitely pre-New Day, but, I mean, he's a guy who'd been around since, like, what, 2007 or 8, which, that's a long run. I mean, even, you know, getting into 2014, he had a good 7-year stretch there. So, might be a nice idea to freshen him up a bit, have him work with some different people. Put on some good matches and in this case get squashed by an up and comer. The match is about what you'd expect. Kofi gets some hope spots in, but it's really the Rusev show. Didn't totally love the finish with the distraction by Lana. I just like, why are we protecting 2014 Kofi? Just, you know, Rusev matches don't really need that, but I mean, it's a minor complaint.
Yeah, I guess they were just trying to put over Lana, I guess, as being like she has some kind of influence on the match, you know, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I know what you mean. Just let them dominate.
Well, yeah. Like, and or give her something better to do than, like, barely distract Kofi. Like, she doesn't do anything, but he sells it as she, like, totally distracted him. But
yeah, just like, she was just, like, talking
just,
to him.
Yeah, she just, like, basically was like, do you have the time? And then he fell off the top. You know, it was just, like,
right. They acted
very
like they,
weak.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not playing to Lana's strengths at all, either in her blazer and her conservative pumps. So, like, come on. She's gorgeous. You got to sex up this chick a little bit.
Yeah,
she has a very severe 80s lady look to her,
yes,
which again is just going back to the Rocky comparison.
Yeah, they're pretty much going like exactly like on the nose Rocky IV, but I really like the Accolade. I think it's a pretty.
Ooh, me too.
It looks great. It looks awesome.
Yeah, agreed. Does he still do that move? Because I don't know that I've ever seen it before.
I don't know if he does.
He needs to, if he doesn't.
Used to be his signature finisher, but signature finisher, wow.
Such a good squash finish, too. Like, to just have some guy and just tap out quick. Yeah, it was pretty sweet. But I went star and a half on it. What'd you guys
Yep, me too.
I went star and 3/4. I was a little bit generous, just maybe because I like Kofi and like this as a debut match.
Yeah, for sure. I think we need to mention, so Regal already out of the gate is amazing in this one.
Yes.
He tells Alex Riley at one point, because Alex Riley is already terrible, like Lana says something and he's just like, no, I can't understand her. Huh? Funny, she's foreign. And it's like, oh God. And Regal asks him, what did his father spend on college? And then he says, in regards to Lana, Regal says, I wouldn't know. He says something about her being a beautiful woman. He says, I wouldn't know what a beautiful woman can do because I've never had one. Mine look like an apprentice beekeeper with so many lumps and bumps on her face. So Regal already is just like as indistinguishable as Tom Phillips and Alex Riley are. Regal's like the exact opposite.
Oh,
like
for sure.
Every line is just a killer.
That reminds me of something he said. This is a WCW, and I don't know why. It's just, I'll never forget it. It was like 96, right? So it's on Nitro or something. He's getting interviewed by Gene Okerlund, and me and Gene, doing what he does, says something to the effect of, oh, Mr. Regal, would you like to address the rumors that you've been spending some time with, I think it was Sarah, Duchess of York? You know, just one of those mean Gene-isms, right? And Regal just rolls with it. He goes, yes, yes, I will address the concerns. You see, I have spent time with her, but she was so cold, it was like sleeping next to a ripped open bloody furnace. You're like, what?
I love your Regal impression.
Yeah.
Spot on.
I didn't even attempt it because I was just afraid of it. So good on you, Tony.
Pawns are really ridicule too.
Yeah. Great fodder for the special relations guys. the thing is too is like he's not just saying funny stuff. Like he can do both. Like he kind of can say like the silly funny lines, but at the same time he's like putting over the match. It's like amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yep.
But anyway, yeah. Quick.
He does a good job of putting over Rusev here and talking about Kofi and his strategy of targeting the midsection. Just he definitely lends some credibility just to this commentary team. It's like, okay, here's someone who really knows what they're talking about, at least within the confines in the context of wrestling.
But so makes Alexander Rusev look good. Solid match. I think any win over our main roster guy looks good if you're in NXT at this point. Mm-hmm. But we head backstage for an interview with Sylvester Lefort, who is from Nice, France. He's looking for a new client, so I guess he's a manager. He wishes Scott Dawson the best. His first in line is Bull Dempsey. Quickly, what was your guys' first impression of Bull Dempsey when he came on screen for his brief appearance?
sort of Hercules light with his chain
and hair.
I had seen Bull Dempsey before, though. I am familiar with him, and this was sort of a younger otterish Bull Dempsey that I was not so used to. Sorry.
Otterish. Gotcha. Hot.
He had some matches, I think, later on with Baron Corbin, if I'm thinking of the correct Bull Dempsey. I have no idea who Sylvester Lefort is.
I've never seen
this individual.
I was lost there for a minute.
Same. I was not familiar with Mr. Lefort.
he tells Bull Dempsey he is too fat, and too then fat. He is rebuffed by Mason Ryan, who I'm also kind of familiar with.
Yeah, I had no clue who that was. He looks good, though.
He was, wasn't he, like, in that second group of NXT reality stars, and then he was in, like, not the Nexus, but the Core or whatever. God, this was like, I think he was from back in that era, basically.
So he had a very memorable run, it seems.
Clearly.
Yes. Thank God.
Anyway, he looks like this, the fun size version of Batista.
So poor Bull gets called fat. Mason Ryan comes out, and Sylvester takes out a single dollar bill, says he makes a lot of money, and then Mason shoves it into his mouth and replies, idiot. And so that was that. So
The OCD in me, like the OCD part of me was like, oh my God, that is disgusting. You don't know where that dollar bill has been, and it's in your mouth now. And so I was sort of grossed out by that, if I'm being honest. Yeah.
So I guess we'll see where Mr. LaFour's search goes in his Pepe Le Pew character. one thing I noticed already as we transition out of the interview is that I think if you're used to watching modern NXT, you're used to these like molten crowds, even for like TV at Full Sail. And this crowd is like pretty subdued. I think you have like a little bit of crowd noise, but I think that'll be something interesting to track as we go. It's like, yeah, the crowd there, because they were pretty subdued, I found, so far. Yep.
Well, I mean, the content kind of lends that some credibility, I think. Not any 4-star matches on this, on this card. No. So.
But spoiler alert.
Right.
We have our next match. We have a number one contenders match for the NXT Women's Championship with Natalya and Emma. Regal says he'll give Natty and Tyson Kidd's marriage 8 months. So,
yes.
Emma's coming out with her, I guess her gimmick is that she dances around Goofy. Any thoughts on Emma's gimmick? What'd you guys think of the dancing thing?
Oh my God, it was awful.
Yeah, not great.
This white girl dancing. Oh my God. It's bad.
Yeah, this was a... this was like a, hey, remember Emma moment for me.
Same.
Because I do. And it was weird because they're still kind of pushing the divas thing here in 2014. But they're also like on commentary catching themselves a little bit. Because I think they realize in NXT, even in these early goings still, that whole idea and branding really clashes with the way that the NXT women's division is being presented and is going to be presented going forward. And like, you've got Emma, who they really do emphasize her athleticism. Like, she can go, but she's saddled with this bizarre character, just very awkward. Mm-hmm. And just between that gimmick and her pretty decent ring work, like, there's nothing about her that's sexualized. And that's just such a contrast from how I think she would have been portrayed, like, around, let's say, the turn of the decade. Like, if she was on the main roster or something, it's like so night and day. Yeah, and she gets that match with Natalya. Again, another main roster, somebody who's been around for a little while. I'm not sure exactly when Natty came in, but she wasn't really making waves, to say the least, and loses here to the Emma Lock, which I think is a pretty cool move, that inverted STF. That's something I've always kind of marked out for, and Emma executes it pretty beautifully here.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Cool. She had some cool moves. She did like the dilemma, which would kind of look like like Tajiri's like tarantula thing, right?
Yeah, it looked awesome.
Yeah, she had some pretty cool moves. I did think it was kind of, I did feel like there was not much to fill in the gaps in the match. Like between those cool moves, I felt like there was like, it was a little janky. Like there wasn't too much to kind of like,
great word janky for it.
Janky's a great word.
Yeah, like it didn't build any momentum. It was kind of just like fiddle around, and then she would hit a big move, which makes sense, you know. And I think that's something you'll see because it is developmental, you know, because that's what you're trying to figure out. But I thought that kind of brought it down a little bit. But I thought it was still a solid match. I gave it a star and a half. And like Tim said, I liked the Emma Lock. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But again, it didn't build much momentum because I felt there weren't any like transitions going on really.
That's fair. I went a little bit higher on it, 1.75 or 1 3/4 if you want to use fractions. because the crowd seemed a little bit more into it, and then Natalya looks good, like she looks really good, and she does a real classy thing at the end. You know, she holds up Emma's hand and, you know, kind of lets her do her bow or whatever. So it was friendly at the end of the match, which I kind of enjoyed.
Yeah, I think danced. They danced.
Yeah, she did the little dance. The little weird cheesy ass
Emma dance. Yeah.
Whatever the fuck. We need a name for that dance.
Yeah.
So two matches, and we have two NXT people being going over main roster people.
Interesting.
As it should be. No. or how little things change, right? No. Right. So many things. So I was a little bit more generous than you guys. I gave it 3.5. No. I gave it I did give it
making it snow.
I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was fair. I completely agree with the criticisms. At the same time, they didn't blow anything. Crowd was into it. It's like a 4-minute TV match. It was fine.
Which we're rating these, but these kind of TV matches are always kind of tricky to rate, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you can't get it. The difference between a star and a half and 2 stars when it's matches like this is really not much.
Quite
negligible. Yeah, for sure.
Like the NXT rating scale for me personally is just different than any like ECW or anything else. Like because I know it more, and that's odd for me to like know things about what I'm watching. So and then I have some perspective because I've watched a ton of NXT shows, so I know what a 5-star NXT match looks like in my opinion. So, so I could, you know, base it on that.
I would largely agree with that. It just in the sense that my NXT rating scale is a little bit different too. Given that NXT is better and right. I have a pro NXT bias. So therefore my star ratings may reflect that.
As long as we're all real clear about how Tim feels about NXT.
Yeah.
Yeah, these ratings of mine may recalibrate and adjust as we progress on this show. We'll see.
Fair enough. Okay, next segment we have Renee Young, seems familiar, introduces Aiden English for a sing-off. As we're getting started, Regal, again, fantastic Regal line. He says an anecdote about having tea with a dwarf who he said made amazing flatbread, which was something.
He said the pitter-patter of Tiny Pete.
Yeah.
Oh, the Tiny Pete.
That was great. Fantastic. I was like, where is he going? Because he said the word dwarf, and I was like, wait, what are we doing? And then he ended with that. It was great.
Yeah, amazing. All I can imagine when he said amazing flat was like a dwarf working at like Quiznos, making a flatbread. But anyway, so Aiden is introduced. He is an actor. So he's working a character where he is like, I guess, sort of a Renaissance man, actor, singer. I thought it was very like genius-like. It was a very genius gimmick. He's having a sing-off with Colin Cassidy. Again, people still have first names. Comes out in a suit. Aidan sings an Italian opera, which then Cass astounds the crowd with his unexpectedly great voice, and he sings Aidan Boy to the tune of Danny Boy. He disses Aidan, calling him soft, and that's S-A-F-W-T.
Yeah, one of those catchphrases that I'd totally forgotten about.
Cass wins, so Aidan stomps him in anger. This is a pretty solid segment. I really like Aidan English. I think he's really good in the role. He really goes all in on the character. And I thought the whole segment was very – reminded me like something you would see on like Superstars in like 1991 or something, which is a good thing for me. Like, you know, kind of just a classic, like goofy but fun enough. Like, didn't drag on too long, and I really like Aidan English character. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I was like, this gimmick needs to come back soon. Like, has there ever been any other sing-offs that you've ever heard of before?
I'm sure there have been, but none probably this well executed and delivered. So, what was I saying before about this not being the talent show NXT? It feels like maybe it's a throwback. I don't know. And keep in mind, this is the show that does not have 26 sitcom writers or however that works who aren't actually able to write anything. And here's what we come up with. This, as you said, Renaissance man character in Aidan English, sort of a theater nerd, it seems like. How any of this applies to pro wrestling is anyone's guess, but again, that's how these characters used to work, so this is what we get, and it's fine for what it is.
I kind of loved it, honestly. It's different. I've never seen anything like it, so I thought it was pretty neat.
Well, the thing on here too is, like, even if it's not like the setting the world on fire, it's like quick, it's simple, it's not like overblown or anything, so like it can only be, you know, like, even if it's not the greatest thing, it can't drag it down that much because it's only like 3 minutes or something. So
I mean, it's engaging considering you're watching basically a house show from 2014. Like, you know, it's pretty impressive that we're already three segments into this thing. We're already kind of into it. So it does grab you.
And it just breaks up the monotony of, here's a match, here's another match, here's a tag team match, here's a 2 out of 3 falls match. Just, it helps to just, even if it's not that good, gives you sort of a palate cleanser between segments and matches.
All right, our next match, we have the aforementioned Mason Ryan versus Tyler Breeze. Really not much to this one. This one was like a really straight up squash, which was interesting because you see Mason Ryan and he's like this like big juiced up guy. But then Breeze comes out and just kind of like kills him. Ryan gets distracted by Sylvester LaFour. Breeze hits the beauty shot, which I guess is kind of like a heel kick type of thing. So this one was like super quick, over very quickly. I gave it a star. Really not much going on. Just, I guess, to put Breeze over. But pretty much another squash match.
So I went to a NXT house show in Atlanta this past summer, and Tyler Breeze was in my favorite match of the night. The other person in that match was Cameron Grimes. So that will tell you what kind of performer that Tyler Breeze is. he is amazing to watch in person. And he's kind of a toned down version now from what you see in this episode, because he's like platinum blonde, kind of like a man bun, like this crazy voice that
those
he has
boots,
going on.
The castles, like you put British Bulldog to shame with those boots. Like.
Yeah, and he kind of does that now still, but it looks way less cheesy than it does here. But he is really fun to watch, and another one of Regal's lines was that his outfit was made out of Brazilian pole cap. And then it kind of did look like that to me for the rest of the night. Like, of course a Brazilian pole cat looks like that.
Amazing.
And that gave me the star too. So fun little squash.
Yeah, I like Breeze. We'll get into Breeze a little more because I think he gets some more. Oh, and they We forgot to mention they do the Tyler Breeze has left the building deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he's entered the building at the beginning. Yeah. So they're doing that. So they're really into the Breeze character. Another Regal thing is, I don't know if he said this right after the sing off, but he said Renee Young gave him the collie wobbles. Which I imagine she gives plenty of men the collie wobbles. But
many men would like to receive the collie wobbles. I am very familiar with this incarnation of Tyler Breeze. He was one of those early NXT breakouts on the network version of NXT. So I was like, oh yeah, this is like the NXT that I'm used to. And yeah, as long as he's got those fuzzy boots, I'm like, that's Tyler Breeze. That makes me feel like I'm at home now. The gimmick is very like Zoolander, I guess, mm-hmm. with the, you know, absolutely. The duck facing. That's going to continue to evolve and interesting and topical for the times ways we will see. But weird that he gets a squash over this guy, Mason Ryan, definitely. I think the beauty shot is a really weak finish, but it is what it is. And I just went a half a star on this one.
Ryan looks like he's cut, like he's tall, he's big dude, like it was kind of not very believable that Tyler mm-hmm. wins, especially with that move.
Happy for him. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that means it's great,
it's weird that we're doing this.
Yeah.
let's not underplay the influence of Sylvester LaFour, okay?
Oh, yeah, you're
don't,
right.
Don't undersell the massive influence of
sauntering down to the ring and standing around.
You know what I always say? Get you someone who looks at you like Tyler Breeze looks at himself and
himself.
His phone.
His selfies.
He does it the whole time. It's pretty great.
Oh, I feel like this is like when selfies were just... I'm sure they've been around for a little while before this, but I feel like this is like the peak of like when selfie sticks were like a new thing and everything.
Yeah.
It was like selfie mania. He's
run with that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to our main event, our feature match, we have Sami Zayn versus Leo Kruger. Leo Kruger is in a black tank top and kind of camouflage pants. He looks like a Roman Reigns stunt double.
kind of does.
Yes, I wrote down great value Roman Reigns.
Absolutely. So I guess he's supposed to be like, because they keep saying he's South African. And like, I think at one point they call him the South African. So I guess he's playing almost like a
lost member of the Truth Commission, right?
Yeah, that's what, like the Jackal or something, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a 2 out of 3 falls match, which in NXT we're told is considered like a rite of passage mm-hmm. based on the Sami Zayn Cesaro match that had taken place before, which is considered kind of a classic of early NXT.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we haven't talked about, so Sami Zayn comes out and like the themes so far, especially when you think like now a lot of these NXT themes are so iconic. I thought of the songs, like a lot of the themes here were just like so generic and lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is true of Sami, and Tyler Breeze didn't even have his somewhat recognizable theme.
Yeah. Like everybody's theme just seemed like generic, like crap. Sami Zayn comes out very smiley. He's coming big off the big Cesaro match. Kruger, I guess there's some kind of conflict going on between these two. Did you guys pick anything up as to what was the feeding?
A little bit. Yeah, it seemed like they were just sort of going back and forth trying to win the number one contendership. Mm-hmm. And Leo Kruger, by the way... early Adam Rose. I know that much. We'll just get that out of the way, I guess. And I have never seen the Leo Kruger version of Adam Rose here. So this is sort of a first for me. Didn't know what to expect from him. But from what I gather, he and Sami had been in sort of a mini feud. And Sami had been around since like May of 2013. 13 in NXT. So not even a full year for him yet under this banner. And he had that great 2 out of 3 falls match with Cesaro. If anyone hasn't seen that, I watched that as part of the GWWE project. And while that match of theirs did not make my list, another one did. Get to that. But the 2 out of 3 falls from August 21st of 2013. Excellent, excellent, which you can watch on the network. And I would highly recommend everyone go out and do, since we will not be covering it on our timeline. But yeah, I'm like, am I going to... I figure this Leo Kruger character can't stick around much longer since, again, I never saw him. I only know him as Adam Rose, and we're coming up on where I did really start following NXT. So he's got to be in the dying days here.
Yeah, I had no knowledge of Leo Kruger. This was completely new to me. I had never known that he had played a South African militant character.
Is Adam Rose a main roster character? I mean, like, where does he go from here to be Adam Rose?
Adam Rose starts in NXT,
yeah,
does move to the main roster, and you're not going to believe it, didn't go anywhere.
Oh, you know, shocking.
Wasn't utilized well. I know, it's unheard of.
Mm-hmm. It's so almost like if you go up, you're really going down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Be interesting to track as we go forward how these...
Mm-hmm.
Men and ladies fair, as they are called up. But I thought this was a pretty good match. Sammy obviously carried it throughout. He had a lot of cool moves. I noticed he did a lot of his kind of signature moves, but they didn't call them what they would be known as. Like, he hits a Blue Thunderbomb, but they don't call it anything. Yep. He hit, let's see, what else? I think he hit something else.
He wins the first fall with his Haluva kick.
Yes, the Haluva kick, which they don't call it that.
No.
But I thought it was a pretty solid match because of Sammy's selling. Kruger, I thought, looked pretty weak in this. Like, because a lot of it, Sammy's selling, but it's a lot of Kruger offense, and his offense was less than great.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of really slow punching and kicking. Like, he looked like he didn't really know what to do between.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looked like he needs some work. But Sammy was really good, and he kind of carried the match, and he kind of sweeps it. Sammy wins both falls and takes him out. I went 2.5 mainly because of Sammy's selling and his offense, but it was kind of brought down by, like I found Kruger, it's like when he went to do something, it's like I could almost feel like he was like having to think about what he was going to do. Like, everything was kind of like he was hesitating. But
yeah, it was awkward looking. I went 2.25 on it, like, because the first fall they got fairly quickly, and I knew it wasn't going to be a long match regardless of the 2 out of 3 falls step, but as it went along, like, it got longer and longer in between, like, pins, because, like, you would normally expect the other dude to get one and then you fight for the last one, right? So it goes on and on. I'm like, okay, well, Sammy's gonna win this because it's too much time in between.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So it kind of made me wonder, like, did they mean for that to happen, or did somebody fuck it up and, like, this guy can't, this match sucks, like, we gotta get out of this. Like, maybe they called it in the ring and was like, pin me again, you know? I don't know. That's kind of the feeling I got from him. They didn't have any chemistry at all, although Sammy is good.
I actually gave this one 3, and I'll tell you why. I think it was just a really tremendous carry job by Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I mean, just his selling was so on point, even though it perhaps wasn't totally deserved for the opponent that he was facing, but still. At the same time, I like that he went two falls straight, you know?
Right. It's different.
There was that stretch in the middle where he is in sell mode, and I'm like, okay, this is where Kruger's going to pick up a fall. But I thought it was good psychology that he didn't just lose a fall to like a basic transition move for the sake of evening it up, because right. that's such a thing that you do in these types of matches. And they didn't do that. They had this pretty, you know, hard fought match, but Sammy gets the decisive and pretty convincing win here. So I was very happy with that. And, you know, part of this is, I'll go ahead and say it. I think that NXT from like 2013 through, I don't know, about 2015 is kind of the Sami Zayn story, in the sense that while it is an ensemble cast of characters, he is, to me, just the protagonist of this brand, just in the sense of he's this great babyface character who is able to connect with the audience because he is such an underdog, and that really plays to his strengths. But they don't treat him like a fucking loser. You know, underdog does not mean you literally lose every single match, other than like you get a little bit of hope here and there. Like, he gets some wins. It's just they're very hard fought, and he kind of eats shit along the way. So I like that he's just this really fighting character, and he's such a strong underdog face that just immediately seemed to take with people. And
yeah, like,
the promotion just seems to be about like building him up, and you know that he's going to go places.
Yeah, like even in this match, he comes off as an underdog, but in the end, he still sweeps it. You know, he still wins exactly. two straight. So they kind of can play it both ways. And mm-hmm. kind of as we're wrapping up the first episode, it's kind of like, I know a lot of the matches so far, not really, you know, we topped out at what, maybe 3 stars, but like it's refreshing.
Which was very generous. Oh my
God. Yeah. yeah. but it's refreshing in modern-ish, you know, this is still modern wrestling, to have a show where every match is pretty definitive. Somebody's winning and you feel like somebody is being built up, and you know, like it's like to see people go over definitively is kind of refreshing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense of direction that helps a lot. Characters are a little bit hit and miss, but mm-hmm. that's what you expect for this sort of thing.
For sure. But I kind of thought this first episode, I kind of was down the middle on it. To me, it was solid. It's just kind of classic 1 hour wrestling formula, but it's kind of a satisfying formula. You have kind of a lot of squash matches and then kind of one feature match that's a little bit, you know, gets a little more time and is a little bit better. So it wasn't anything fantastic, but I thought it kind of accomplished what it's looking to accomplish. It's building up the guys you want to build up, Rusev, Breeze, Zayn. So I thought it was solid enough for this first episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe a tick below, maybe like a 4.5, you know, just a little bit less than pretty good.
A little bit less than pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would, probably exceeded my expectations going in by just a skosh. You figure this is like a 45-minute show. It's very lean. So even if something like really sucks, it's not going to be in front of you for long enough to really be that much of a drag on the product. They'll move on to something else and hopefully recapture your interest if they're starting to lose you. And that's just sort of the understanding going in. These are guys who are learning, not just learning how to work, but how to work TV matches, learning camera angles and what camera to look at, all that stuff. So if they fuck up, which they're going to fuck up sometimes, at least it's on this program and not Monday Night Raw or SmackDown or right. national television. Yeah. And that's sort of refreshing. It's cool to see, like, we can still experience that, but sort of to Jenny's point, it is a little bit of a glorified house show. It's not really mm-hmm. set up to be mm-hmm. criticized in a serious way.
Right. It's kind of not really a TV show. You know what no. I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more structured like a classic sort of wrestling TV show, like an 80s wrestling show. Not
studio, even.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like not what we're kind of come to expect from like a modern Raw or SmackDown or something like that. But it's kind of like a, almost like a sum is greater than its parts type of thing in a way. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Because it all, like, it works together. Like, it makes it more intimate. Like, it's smaller, but it's more intimate in that way. And I think that we'll see, we'll get a sense of that growth as we go along.
Awesome.
It's a nice little package.
Mm-hmm. I like nice packages.
Don't we all?
Okay, so... Speaking of nice packages,
other things that
we have a nice package of content. Place2bNation.com.
That was a tremendous transition, Jacob. I applaud you for that.
Like that setup.
So I wanted to tell you guys real quick about this feed, the Place2bNation Wrestling feed. We have a bunch of great stuff on there right now, like episode number 540 of the Place to Be podcast. JT and Scott were joined by John D'Amato to reminisce about WrestleMania 6. Do you guys have any WrestleMania 6 memories?
Other than to say, I think it's kind of overrated.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Seven over six any day of the week for me. But a lot of that is, I mean, I hate the Ultimate Warrior. Fuck him.
On a new, do you have any thoughts about WrestleMania 6?
Well, not live, because I was still in the womb at this point.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing. All right. On a new Wrestling Warzone, JT and Chad dive into WCW Monday Nitro from 2/5/96. Special Relations Boys are back to discuss their GWWE Top 100 list in episode number 3. Also, we call that Accent Pod. Mm-hmm. How are you enjoying Accent Pod, Tim?
Oh, I'm greatly enjoying it. These are not short episodes, by the way, and I'm glad that they're not. I support long podcasts. And
they're recording the Submetric system, I think.
They're recording in the metric
system. In the metric system.
I love it, and I enjoy accents as well, so we get quite a lot of that. And the unveiling of these lists, while I was chastising certain members of the panel for their anti-NXT bias, others I was applauding, so... I like the unveiling. I like that we've got a lot of folks that that are unveiling their lists. You can't go wrong with a good unveiling. Or unwrapping while we're talking packages.
Do you find it difficult to tell the difference between Ben and Rory?
No.
Callum's pretty distinct. But
Callum is very distinct. But I don't have that problem because... I'm trying to get you to say Rory again.
Rory. I don't think it's Rory.
He sounds like another podcaster that a comics podcaster that I listen to. So, and you know, I've heard him on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast as well. So, I'm kind of more used to him. Mm-hmm. Ben Callum, I'd never heard, but Callum's very distinctive. So, yeah, I don't have a problem there.
I find that I have to set my playback to like half. Like, otherwise I'm missing everything that they're saying.
Right.
Which I'm sure can be said about some of the shit that I've hosted before.
Well, they probably listen to ours on double speed because
probably so. I'm so very slow.
Right. We throw in so many guttural stops and we're just hard to understand anyway.
Southerners, you know, we take our time in a sentence. So, yeah. All right. Speaking of taking our time, on the new Row 1 Seat 1, Ben.
Like a talking WCW.
Right, it is. welcomes Matt Sills to discuss his career on episode number 140 of Main Event. Scott, Nate, and Steve Willey talk New Japan Pro Wrestling, Tessa Blanchard, Royal Rumble, another easy thing for me to say, and much more. What do you guys make of the Tessa Blanchard deal, Jake?
I've seen a little bit of it. I guess I haven't kept up with it super close. It doesn't seem good.
For sure.
It does not seem good. From what I gather, she was in a championship match for like the men's title. Is that right, Tim?
That is my understanding as well.
But she lost, I do believe. Spoiler alert. I didn't think she did. I don't know. I guess I missed the outcome, but I assumed that they wouldn't give it to her.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not gonna, you know what? Let's just avoid spoilers. And say
sure. Yeah.
Probably not good. She sounds like a bit of an asshole. but we'll give her an opportunity to learn and grow. How about that?
All right. She's young. Speaking of youngsters, on the news, talking WCW, me, you, and Greg Phillips break down three matches. Youngster. Greg is obviously the youngster in that scenario.
Kevin Sullivan,
because he looks the exact same, like every match that I watched of his. But that is a really tremendous episode.
Is Kevin Sullivan the dwarf that was making the flatbread?
That was Tiny Pete, Baby Pete. What
the pitter patter.
Yeah.
Pitter patter.
Little feet, Tiny Pete. Okay. Oh my God.
You will surrender to the pitter patter of the Taskmaster.
We had some good feedback from that episode, so I'm glad that people didn't automatically delete it, you know, as they downloaded it from Podbean.
I mean, they might have and still said good things, which
I'll take it. I don't have a segue. In a PTBN special, Scott Criscolo reveals the first half of his GWWE pay-per-view and TV match every list. I think he does 100 through 51 or some odd number there. With his ring number 4, joins Ryan and Cindy, continuing their look at WrestleMania rematches. Also, you can check out the Pop Feed. You can check out great shows like Hard Traveling Fanboys, Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, DC For You, Marvel Age, which you are a part of, Tim, the Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, and a lot more special content there. And if you need more things to listen to, you can check out me. I have my own feed. It's called The Jenny Position. You can find it on Spotify, Podbean, all your catcher apps. And you can hear me on Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop with Tim, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, Journey Through Infinity with you, Tim. Justin and Scott. So, you know, subscribe. I appreciate that if you do. On the social media, you can find the greatest sitcom of all time tournament going on right now. We are in round 2. You can like our Facebook page and see the polls every day for matchups. You can also go to place number 2B Nation on Twitter, and you can get those polls every day as well. Do you guys want to vote on today's polls?
Sure. Let's do it.
Pull those up.
Let's continue the disrobing. I mean, unveiling.
Yes.
Of the package.
I like disrobing a lot. So we're in round 2 of the Central Perk region. You have number 39, Undeclared, versus number 7, That 70 Show. Pretty easy, That 70 Show vote.
Yeah, Undeclared. That was one of those like kind of one season wonders, right?
Yeah.
I think it was okay, but no, you can't really compare to That 70 Show.
Yeah, I'd go That 70 Show. I've heard Undeclared's good, but I never really watched it.
We have number 10, Boy Meets World, versus number 23, Kenan and Kel. That's interesting because you get like the same sort of like age range on those.
Good matchup. Good matchup.
Yeah, it's a good matchup. I had to go Boy Meets World just because I've seen more of it. I do think that Kenan is hilarious, so that was kind of hard. But I just, in the end, seen more Boy Meets World.
I laugh because Boy Meets World was the source of tremendous controversy in the sitcom tournament on the old blog that I was a part of. So I, because of that, I cannot in good conscience ever vote for it. and that means Kenan and Kel gets the nod, which is actually, I mean, I have seen every episode of that show, I'm sure, about 5 times without remembering a single thing about any of them, except that Kel loves orange soda.
Orange soda. Yeah, I'm going hard for Kenan and Kel here. It hit me like at the exact right age of like. And I think it's actually pretty good for what it is. For being like a Nickelodeon sitcom, it's pretty, I think it holds up pretty well. I'm Kenan Kel all the way.
All right. Next up, number 18, Third Rock from the Sun versus number 15, Malcolm in the Middle. Another pretty good matchup. I never did. I know Malcolm in the Middle was like really popular. It went forever, and I don't know, I always thought Third Rock was always just kind of more quirky and kind of more my style, and it had Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it, who was dreamy, so that's why I voted for it.
Yeah, two long-running but now kind of forgotten shows.
It
is an interesting matchup, although Malcolm in the Middle is getting a little bit meme boosted in today's culture a little bit, it seems. I guess I'll go Malcolm in the Middle. I just kind of think it was the better show, but I definitely remember liking Third Rock quite a lot. So that's a tough one for me.
Yeah, I think I go Malcolm in the Middle just because I've seen it more. Like, I definitely remember catching a lot because it would play in like a block back when I was younger and I was still like watching The Simpsons when it played like live. It was kind of in a block with The Simpsons and King of the Hill, which I was pretty locked in for all those shows at the time. So I think I'm going Malcolm in the Middle.
All right. I got outvoted again. All right. Okay.
I remember Lois's mother on Malcolm in the Middle was played by Clitoris Leachman. and she was a total psychopath, her character on that show.
Speaking of psychopaths, okay. Number 2, Frasier versus number 31, Becker. Pretty easy Frasier vote there.
Yeah, Frasier.
Yeah.
All right. Frasier. At least we
Becker ended. Not a bad show, but Frasier was.
Yeah, you know. All right. So we also kicked off the 2020 stretch project, which will probably have a ballot with the King of the Road match as number one by one of the one of the players in this, because we're determining the greatest WCW match ever. I already know what it is, so it's not a lot of debate.
Easy for you, yeah.
Easy for me. I just have to debate the next, you know, 90-ish slots because 95, right. Two shows takes up, you know, most of a top 10. So you can find
well,
our...
I'm sure you've since added the Doomsday Cage match.
Oh, yes, of course I have. Number 11.
It launched in Hulkamania. The not Mega Powers, but Mega...
The un-Mega Powers. Yeah. so you can go to the Facebook page, which is GWCW matches, or you can look at the Pro Wrestling Only message board, so you can see all the nominated matches and check those links out, and check out placemenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes on articles on the topics of worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Polly's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And you can't forget about weekly veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly walk around the web. If you're online shopping at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the PlaySpy Nation homepage. And it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. So, that'll do it for the
look. Right.
Nice package.
Thank you.
All right.
Same to you, Jim.
So, we will hop into the January 8th, 2014 episode of NXT. And sadly, our man William Regal has been replaced on commentary by Byron Saxton. So now basically all of the commentators are interchangeable and indistinguishable, including Todd Phillips, director of Joker. But anyway, our first match, Summer Rae with Sasha Banks versus Bayley with Natalya. Before we get into the match, and this is a running thing through this entire episode, what in the hell is going on with the ring announcing here? I don't know if, did y'all notice this? That there was like this woman and the way she would announce it was like so robotic. Am I the only one who noticed this?
Yeah, it was, that was a little bit bizarre. It so took me out of the moment that at first I thought this was a tag match. And I was like, wow, yes. Summer Rae and Bayley are really going for a while. Neither of them is tagged out. I was like, oh, it's a singles match.
Yeah, it sounded like an old like PlayStation 1 game, like announcing. Or Summer Rae with. So it's like a computer. It was very strange. And it was the entire show. I don't know. It was really weird.
And but anyway. Announcer Siri.
Yeah, it was. Like, I feel like Siri has more emotion than this ring announcer, and I don't know who she was. I don't even think I saw her in the ring at any point. I don't know.
I don't know who it was.
It was strange. But anyway, so Summer Rae, so Sasha Banks here is kind of like, I guess Summer Rae is kind of flunky, like her little sidekick, which is weird, all things considered.
BFFs.
Yes, exactly, BFFs. Again, the songs, Bayley's song sounds like a generic, like, I guess like pop punk sort of like instrumental, but nothing completely generic. And it's weird to see Sasha as just like a nobody. I don't know. But anyway, so the match, Summer mocks Bayley. Bayley throws the headband. Summer does a bunch of stretching spots. On commentary, they say she has long dancer legs. Bayley starts making a comeback.
Yes, she's that long fall. Dancer offense is really
a lot of stretching. And then Bayley hits the Bayley to Belly and pretty much a squash. Pretty basic. I gave it a star.
I wrote down 2 stars. Now I'm wondering why the fuck I did that. Because I find Summer Rae, who I've never seen before, to be extremely annoying and awkward. She's missing half of her top there. I don't know. It's just, it was not fun. And I'm not a Bayley fan anyway. Why did I give this 2 stars? They did like that headband shaming thing at the beginning of the match was kind of like stupid and childish. What kind of dancer is she supposed to be? A ballerina? Because she looks more like a stripper.
Okay, so I struggled with Summer Rae because I was like, oh, yeah, I know that name. And I was going, wait, how do I know her? What do I know her from? Like, and I was really just having a hard time trying to place her until they mentioned Fandango. And I was like, oh, that's right. She came in with Fandango, or they were paired together for a while. And they had sort of a Dancing with the Stars gimmick. So, yeah, I had completely blanked on the fact that she transitioned into NXT. I don't know if she gets any better. Again, one of those, like, she must be going away at some point because I sure don't remember seeing her later into the year.
Yeah, it was weird because she was like the focus of the match, sort of.
Yeah.
She really was. Yeah.
Even though Bayley wins, I feel like they were really putting a lot of attention on Summer Rae.
Yeah, they're like trying to make Summer Rae happen. I guess it just sort of doesn't. I gave the match a star and a quarter. You know, it is what it is. I know.
Those legs. This long dancer legs.
That stretching offense really got you.
Bailey's side ponytail really does it for me.
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, what it was it wasn't her hairstyle today, so
yeah, right.
You just way overcorrected in your positivity for her. This early Bailey character, by the way, is like they're toning it down. I think they're going to keep toning it down, but it's a little bit, I want to say, uncomfortable. Like, she's portrayed as, they talk about how she's sort of naive and childlike on commentary. But as I recall, she was almost portrayed as being like sort of afflicted in some way.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know how to like
she's like simple kind of.
Yeah, it was, and they wouldn't make fun of her, but it was just you can't really have it both ways, you know what I mean? Like, you either have to, if you're doing that gimmick, which I don't know that you should do that gimmick at all. You
should not do that gimmick.
But nope. If you're doing it, and it's supposed to be a feel-good thing, then do it. But they didn't. They just sort of played it straight. And I don't know. Maybe we'll see some of her interviews later on that just are kind of cringe. But anyway, this is our first exposure to Bailey here. So hard to believe she was around this long ago.
And Sasha Banks, who is kind of like
Sasha,
an afterthought here, just tagging along. All right. Next up, we head backstage for an interview with Xavier Woods, who has a very different look than you would see today. He has like a mustache and kind of a big afro. He's very frenetic, has a lot of energy. He seems to be trying to get over this over 9,000 thing, which...
I
actually know
ask
the
you
reference.
Guys, what is it?
No idea.
It is. This is from Dragon Ball Z. I know this from.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was
going
to say, he seems like he's doing a Dragon Ball Z thing, but I don't know anything about Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, so I guess his character, I guess, is supposed to be like a really energetic, like, nerd, I guess. I don't. I guess that's what he's going for. But it's pretty, like, it doesn't really say anything of too much note, but. I guess that's his character, is that he's a really high energy nerd. And
I have a feeling he's sort of grasping at just trying to take ownership of his career and find a character, because he's just been getting nothing.
Right.
So he's now sort of got an opportunity. I mean, if he's in NXT for any length of time, maybe he can work with that and find something that really suits him and his personality and gets over in a way that he wouldn't be able to on the main roster.
Yeah, and I guess it's supposed to be like referencing his kind of his real life interests, I guess, because he's into video games and the like, and quote unquote nerd culture, as it's called,
right?
Yeah. But anyway, next match, the big follow-up from the sing-off, we have Cass versus the Artist, Aiden English. And again, Cass comes out with a absolutely horrible generic techno theme. Oh, yeah. Man, it was bad. Cass to me looks like a big guy I would have went to high school with. Like, just like some big guy at your high school that's like...
Some 7-foot guy at your high school?
Yeah, like, maybe not that, but you know, he just looks like kind of like a dude. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's like not very distinguishable to me.
A dude, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. And Aiden comes out singing, again, very genius-like in his gimmick. the commentary really misses Regal, I find, this match. Yes. Because it was really like, this is pretty much just like Cass controls early on, then he misses a splash, and then Aiden English hits like his finisher, which is the director's cut, which is kind of like some kind of neck breaker thing out of nowhere. There's really not much reaction, not much to it. I only gave this one a half a star. I thought this one was kind of weak, even for like a quick squash kind of match.
What do you think about him spelling S-A-W-F-T?
Wasn't impressed.
Soft. As he hits like the guy, I'm like,
I like what? The way that you say it better.
Yeah. It might be entertaining if he said it like that. Like, what are we doing, dude? Oh, tell me I don't have to watch months of him doing that on this show.
No. Oh, dear.
That's gonna get old.
I actually had that realization watching this. Because I was like, oh, shit, I forgot. I really did not care for Big Cass. It's going to become. It's
Let's just call him Big Ass.
Big Ass. I went 3/4 of a star, so I'm not beating you by much here. Sing Off was probably better than their match, but yep. At least this this scorching feud got a blow off. 2-week shot,
so
here.
Well earned, yeah.
Yep, well earned blow off there, and a well earned win by Aiden English.
The crowd was like dead too, like absolutely no reaction. Which is probably like the same. Well, this might have been taped like literally in the same night that they did the sing off. So
yeah,
apparently,
they would tape 3 and 4 shows a night. So it's entirely possible.
All right. So after that crap match, we head backstage for an interview with Adrian Neville. He's wearing, he has an interesting look. He looks very, I don't know, UK to me. He had like a fully buttoned red polo.
It looks like he's going to be on Accent Pod.
So his phone rings, and the camera pans to see that it is Tyler Breeze is calling him in the same room. Breeze wants to tell him sorry for the Bo Dallas loss. So it's our first mention of Bo Dallas. Without having to look at his uggo face, which I thought was a little uncomfortable because Adrian Neville is not the most attractive guy. I don't know if I'm wrong in that. So, but it's a little awkward to be calling him uggo.
He does have a Gollum look to him.
Hey, well, your name for him is Sexy Gollum.
Sexy Gollum. Only Puck's sexy.
I was going to say, he's not quite, he hasn't turned into that just yet.
Not so quite.
Yeah,
those ears, though, is what does it.
This is something else that's changed, by the way. So we had, we have Tyler Breeze calling this not conventionally attractive face. Uggo. Which I'm sorry, I did laugh at it.
Yeah, look, too.
It's wrestling. I actually laughed at that whole exchange. I thought it was pretty well done. Earlier in our last episode, we had Sylvester LaForte, who's playing an offensive French stereotype, calling someone else fat. So these are things that, I mean, they're kind of minor in the grand scheme of how bad wrestling used to be, but even by today's standards, it's like not really done. And I'll tell you, the hardest I laughed was later in the show when we got a Be a Star promo. So
yeah, I noticed that too.
I was just thinking that,
like, they're not even like creative or anything. It's just like, you're fat, you're ugly. Like, that's really it's not very like clever or anything.
It kind of a little bit of a less funny version of Stefan from Weekend Update. Bill Hader as Stefan.
Oh yeah, that's a good.
Kind one. Of a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Feel.
Tyler. Yeah. His voice is just.
Yeah.
So Zoolander.
Yeah, I can tell that's what he's going for, and it's not totally landing, but it's still cracking me up. So I don't know.
So Neville tells him he can give him a facelift. And so Breeze covers his face and Neville says he'll play the waiting game. And Breeze calls him the man that Mother Nature forgot to make good looking. But
it's like an Austin Powers heel comment. You know, sounds like something Dr. Evil would say.
But
maybe that's the attitude. Like, if our insults are just so bad that you just laugh at how bad they are, then sort of takes the sting out of it.
I guess he's supposed to be kind of like Zoolander, so he's not supposed to be like the smartest guy if he's doing the Zoolander thing. So I guess he's not like creative enough to come up with anything clever. So he just calls people ugly. And but
fits the character.
I do like the Breeze character though. He's so into it, like with the voice and everything. Like, it's not great, I think, but anytime somebody buys totally into it, I can get into it.
Me too.
In the little side comments he's making as Neville is basically dressing him down, just, oh no, I don't like that. he is very committed to it.
And Neville's playing such like a straight tough guy, kind of like, I'll give you a facelift, you know, like, and he's just being a goofy, you know, Zoolander male model. Okay. But anyway, we, Xavier Woods, comes out and I think we get, this is where we get Kane coming out, director of operations at this time, corporate Kane.
Mm-hmm. Kane.
Who says Woods has been impressive on Raw and he's put together a petition to bring Big Show back. Says the authority was waiting to punish him and that time is now because he is going to have to face Alexander Rusev. They also said that Xavier Woods, he was billed from Angel Grove. So you have another reference to Power Rangers. So they're really pushing the... What did y'all think of having Kane a part of this in any way?
You know how I feel about main roster stink. You're already laughing. That main roster stink on my NXT. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
My thought, surprisingly, was that Kane is actually way more attractive than his face mask would indicate. I was like, he's not bad looking. He's the, you know, older guy, but he looks good. You know, wearing a sort of baggy suit, but you know, I imagine it's probably difficult to get to his size.
One of wrestling's great success stories. I mean, he's this disfigured burn victim who has spent most of his life in and out of detention centers and psychiatric institutions and through wrestling was able to really reclaim some agency here. And his burns and scars were miraculously healed. He gained the confidence to show his face to the world, and eventually just ascended in the ranks of his profession. I mean, my goodness, just what an HR story, success story, really. He assaulted, Tombstone Pile drove the CEO of the company, somehow came back from that. I mean, that's pretty
amazing. Yeah, it is.
But I think you should, I agree with Tim. Keep him on the main roster. I don't know why it needed to be. I feel like there's some other way you can set up him facing Rusev. But anyway, Rusev comes out.
I'm sorry. Was the thing with the Big Show... And you may not know, I didn't do a deep dive into this. Was that the crying Big Show stuff that everybody was laughing at? And he got fired for helping John Cena or not listening to John Laurinaitis? I don't know. It was one of those, like,
I have no idea.
The world,
me either.
As the world turns with Big Show, he's made a million face and heel turns throughout his career. Somebody made a list a while back. It was hysterical. But yeah, I think this was maybe in the crying Big Show era. and he's been brought back now. with or without an ironclad contract. I'm not sure.
Okay, that does sound familiar. The ironclad contract sounds familiar. But Rusev comes out in his shower curtain, his brown shower curtain attire, and pretty much annihilates Xavier Woods. Xavier Woods comes in hot, but eats a Samoan drop. He tries to hit his, I guess, his over 9,000 move, whatever it is, but he gets caught in the accolade and he taps immediately. So another strong Rusev squash over a main roster guy, although maybe not the highest, you know, in rank, but still. So I gave it a star and a half. I think these Rusev squashes, I put a little bit more because I just like that style of squash when you just have like a big hoss guy like destroying somebody. So I gave it a star and a half. Rusev still looks good.
Yeah, I agree. Star and a half for me. And I need Woods to get rid of all of that hair, though. It looks pretty rough on him. And good Lord, I can't wait till Rusev changes his gear. And Lana, too, for that matter. 9 to 5 Lana over there. But yeah, fun to see the accolade again. That is my jam right now.
Yeah, it's so good. He like wrenches it in so tight.
Yeah, it looks awesome. Rough.
Like really, I feel like the shower curtain gear is like his only, it's like the flaw in his gimmick. Otherwise, I mean, it's,
right.
He's great.
Yep. And I actually went a star and a quarter, which is basically the same as a star and a half for this stuff, as we talked about. The accolade is one of those moves, you know, basic camel clutch that can either look really shitty by the wrong person or really great. And it looks really great when Rusev does it. Alexander Rusev, excuse me. So I'm definitely digging it. That's a big part of what's helping him get over is having that strong finish. And I mean, for just such a basic move that's been around forever, he makes it look really good.
Yeah. Kofi and Woods, I hope they figure something out for these guys.
Yeah, it seems like floundering. They should probably get together, you know?
Yeah.
Figure something out.
Yeah, we'll see. Speaking of Kofi, he has a quick interview. He just gives a pretty basic babyface promo about getting beat by Rusev, but he did say, so he mentions the distraction by Lana, and I thought it was funny because he said that she was screaming all kinds of slang at him, which I guess was like some kind of Russian slang. Can't imagine what she would say. I'm assuming it was Nemanja. If I had to guess. But I thought it was an interesting choice of words by Kofi to say that she was screaming slang at him and he got distracted.
Yeah, he was so offended by her language that he fell off the top rope.
Yeah,
I thought it was a little sketchy too when she said she was yelling slang at him. I was like, uh-oh. It was a little. But, okay, next match. We've moved at a pretty quick pace. We have Tyson Kidd versus Baron Corbin, who does not even get an entrance here, which is interesting if we think with hindsight where we are now that he just is kind of already in the ring.
Exit.
Again, we get generic and sucky intro music. I don't know when CFOs came because those are like the guys who kind of came up with all these new themes, but they need to get them ASAP because these themes are trash. Yep. Corbin weird doesn't have his like long hair at this point. He has this kind of like medium shaggy do going on. So Corbin controls early. There's a lot of basic power offense. They tie up. Kid gets the advantage. Kid works some kicks. I thought he had some pretty good looking offense, and then he hits a top rope net breaker and puts Corbin away. I gave this a star. Again, pretty much a squash. Even though Baron Corbin did get a little bit of shine, this was pretty much to put over Tyson Kidd. So, 1 star for me.
Yeah, it's funny because commentary, it seemed like they were trying to get Corbin over as opposed to Kidd. So, I was like a little bit confused by that. I mean, they had lots of really nice things to say about Corbin. So I'm like, y'all forgot who's supposed to run this. Zach Corbin.
Yeah, they were trying to. They said he like got into fights, and like he used to be an NFL player, and he would get into fights at practice. So they're kind of making him out to be like a tough guy or something. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I do like his short hair.
Right. So we've got Tyson Kidd, who, again, another one of these main roster guys who's come down to NXT. You figure he's doing it to put some of these up and coming talent over. But as we will find out, Tyson Kidd will have somewhat of a different trajectory. That's an easy word for me to say. Having said that, this is sort of battle of the creator wrestlers, it felt like, circa 2005. Just both of them looking fairly indistinctive. Like, oh God. And here's the thing of it is, like, I hate Baron Corbin so much today. Like, 2020 Baron Corbin is such hot garbage that it just sort of residually bleeds into everything he's ever done.
Right.
Like, I just hate him. I hate his shitty tattoos. I hate his rapidly deteriorating hair. I hate his navel that looks like the opening to a fleshlight. It's just everything. It's just worthless, and I can't stand it. And I like Tyson. I mean, I do. And I'm glad he won. He wins with a blockbuster, and they act like that's a move that no one's ever seen. It's just... I gave this a quarter of a star.
Oh my god.
You know what? He's just going to be an automatic drag on my server. Yeah. So.
See, I've seen some good Corbin matches in NXT later on. So he's one of the ones that I'm sort of like mentally flagging to like watch and see where he goes wrong. You know, like why... Why has he always sucked, or when did he start sucking? You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alex so Riley compares maybe... Tyson Kidd to Eddie, which I thought was high praise.
That is high praise.
A little distaste.
All right, so we head to our main event, which is a tornado tag between. I guess Nuncio and Camacho versus the Ascension, who are the NXT champs. Hunico. Hunico. Sorry.
Wow, this League of Nations here with the FBI and.
They come out on bikes. The Ascension have a decently cool entrance. So Hunico and Camacho fight in street clothes. What do y'all think about people who fight in non-wrestling gear? This is usually like a very polarizing thing.
Only if you're Ric Flair, is that allowable. Or Steve Austin in his blue jeans.
Well, other than that, I'm not street clothes for Ric Flair are like khakis and loafers. So.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, yeah. I do like their bikes. But I don't like their gear.
Well, considering I don't believe I've ever seen this team of Hunico and Camacho, I don't know that it registered that it wasn't what they usually wore when they wrestled.
I think it was. Like, I think this is their normal gear.
Very good. Well, then I'm sure it's fine. I like when if somebody makes a change to like, again, just blue jeans, if it's branded a street fight, it's like at some point there was a rule, an unwritten rule in wrestling created that if your match is called a street fight, you have to wear jeans. You just have to. Otherwise, you forfeit. So that's not exactly what this is. This is a tornado tag match. And... I've never been that high on the Ascension, and I don't know. It's a little bit of that. You almost feel like the crowd is going to start chanting, Which one's Connor? Which one's Victor? I certainly have that problem with them, but I think that's going to work itself out as I see more of their work doing this.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with them. I feel like they were kind of on the outs as I got more into NXT. Like, but I thought this was kind of, I think it hurt them that it was a tornado tag rather than a regular tag, because the whole first part was just so, like, they just kind of went off into the corners and just, like, did strikes for what seemed like 10 minutes with nothing changing. And it wasn't really till the end that they really started to try and do anything with any kind of psychology, because then they started, like, you know, isolating guys and stuff and getting put out. Yeah. Like, they started, I forget who it was, somebody hit like a sucky moonsault, but Connor eventually got isolated. But it's like, and I don't know, it's like by the end they kind of started getting it together a little bit, but the first part just seemed like such a drag, because it seemed like they weren't doing anything. I went 1.5 stars. The Ascension hit the Fall of Man, which kind of to me looks sort of like Total Elimination from ECW. Which was a pretty cool move, but yeah, I don't think Camacho and Hunico were going to be the ones to come in here and put on a great match with the Ascension.
No, I feel like if you're in a tornado match, there needs to be a lot more shit happening than like off in your separate corners, chopping each other. Like, sorry, it's too organized. It needs to be more brawly, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I feel like they were trying to get across that it was chaotic, but it didn't at all. It felt super slow.
Yeah.
Right, and it just, yeah, to your point, Jenny, it needed more plunder, as they say.
Yeah.
And this was, like, a very controlled chaos in this sort of sterile environment, so... I don't know. I know that the Ascension has a sort of strong year in terms of how they're utilized, and I'm going to try to keep an open mind towards them as opposed to like a Baron Corbin, who I just don't think I'm going to bother with.
Dud. Next.
It did pick up. Yeah, it did pick up towards the end a little. I like the double power bomb spot.
Me too.
The moonsault, albeit shitty, at least was a move that was sort of exciting. So I went 2 stars.
Yeah, mine too. I like the double cover too. I'm kind of a sucker for the double moves and then the double cover, because I don't see them do that much. Pretty cool.
I like a double submission is what I like.
Ooh, that's hot.
That's sexy.
Always. But yeah, so that was our lackluster main event, and that wraps up this. I almost feel like they've been better off, like, because I guess Hunico and Camacho are like main roster guys, but I mean, they've got to be pretty low on the, pretty low, I think. And I feel like they would have been better off maybe facing some kind of other NXT team, but I guess it is what it is. But I definitely thought this episode was a step down from the first one, from the January 1st one. I think just because you didn't have, you know, you have no Zayn. You don't really have any of your, as many of your big players on it. So I thought it was kind of a step down. I went like 4 out of 10 on this one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, and no Regal on commentary. Which
plus Baron Corbin.
Kind of like what Tim was saying, you kind of get the vibe, like, especially this episode, it kind of feels like you're watching, like, OVW just with, like, really good production value or better production value. You know, like, OVW looks like...
With production value.
Yeah, exactly. Some. Yeah. Maybe not great, but compared to it, but as far as, like, the guys working, a lot of them look very kind of rough. Because it's interesting here, and it's something, like, I'll be interested in seeing as we go on, is, like, NXT at this point is not filled with a ton of guys who have like a decade of experience working in the indies. Like, a lot of these are guys that they're basically pulling who have like maybe a couple years of wrestling experience, and they're just trying to train them in the WWE style. Mm-hmm. And you right. can really, I think it really comes through in these episodes.
And you know, what's going to be interesting to see is if this is a pattern, and I kind of have a hunch that it will be, because as we said, they're taping so many shows in one shot. Like, clearly this episode had to be either the start of a new cycle, so you're sort of kind of getting the crowd warmed up, or sort of the middle stretch of a taping where, you know, people are going to be losing interest a little bit mm-hmm. and going to the bathroom or whatever. And, you know, you're going to pop them again with something hot and send them home happy.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that's going to come across in the individual episodes where they will ebb and flow like this. So we'll have to keep an eye on how that.
Yeah. And like a silver lining of not having like how Zane wasn't on the second episode is it gives you a chance to kind of miss him a little bit, mm-hmm. which is a exactly. nice feeling when you get used to modern wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, in modern wrestling, it's like guys are so overexposed. So it at least gives you a chance where you're like, oh, I didn't see Sami Zayn. Like, mm-hmm. I hope he's on the next episode, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. You guys ready for some awards?
Yes.
All right.
So
MVP. What do we have for MVP? I have Sami Zayn, because to me, he looked the most, even though he was only on the one episode. To me, he was in the best match and completely carried it. And he also, to me, looked like the biggest star of anybody on either episode.
I would agree. Sami Zayn.
Yeah, easily. He's there already.
All right. Our someone who needs to go back to the Performance Center for some more work. So basically our LVP, least value player, I have Leo Kruger, which maybe not the... I don't know. I feel like he got a good spot and did not utilize mm-hmm. it. He got a lot of time. He got to be in there with somebody who is an awesome worker. And to me, he didn't really, you know, like that was his spot and he didn't really do anything with it.
For me, I gave this one to Summer Rae because I hated everything that she did. It was really gross.
I am going to give this to Baron Corbin.
I knew you would.
Get him the hell out of here. He is, when you talk least valuable, I mean, that's.
This might have to be the Baron textbook. Corbin Award.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that really, too. Yeah.
The Corbin Award.
We're already Award. Stealing gimmicks over here.
Oh, man. Okay. Stock rising. So I have Breeze, I thought looked good, Zayn, and Rusev, because he went over strong in the two squash matches.
Yep. Completely agree.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, we'll go with all of them. Maybe Bailey, same time.
All right. The stock falling, people who did not look good. I have Leo Kruger, who was also my LVP because I thought he didn't make anything of the big spot. And also have Alex Riley on commentary because I thought he was awful.
Add Mason Ryan to that Ooh. List.
Ooh, he's yeah, good pick there.
I probably just forgot about him.
Kruger for sure for stock falling. You get the sense that he's a guy who's been around for a little bit as a character, having some measure of success, but it just feels like he's hitting the skids here.
All right. Best match, I got Zayn Kruger.
Yep.
Yeah, easily.
Good. Worst match, I have Tornado Tag, which wasn't my lowest star rating, but I kind of thought of it as like for the amount of time it got, it was maybe the most disappointing.
I went with Corbin versus Kidd.
Yep.
Worst match.
It's good.
Best gimmick, I have Rusev because I thought he had the best character so far.
Tyler Alex. For me.
Yeah, I'm going to go Tyler also.
Yeah, I was kind of split.
Right. God, Rusev's a good pick. It's just, here's my challenge. I like don't think of Rusev as an NXT guy, even though
right.
he totally is at this point and should probably win this, but I don't know. Breeze probably entertained me more overall on these two episodes. Not so much in ring, but that little segment backstage showed a lot of personality.
Agree. Worst gimmick, which I think this will be one of the most fun ones to track, because I feel like we're going to get like a million.
Yes.
Like random gimmicks, but I went with Kruger again, though I could see the Emma gimmick is not great either. So I could kind of almost tie between those two. The dancing is just because she doesn't even look like she wants to be doing it. Like,
yeah, I'm going to second you on Emma there.
Emma's a good pick for worst. Yeah, I'm with you. Just because she's not bad. It's just so.
Yeah, the gimmick sucks.
Yeah.
She's like basic drunk white girl gimmick.
And finally, best moment, I have the Neville Breeze backstage promo.
Really?
I'm with you. Yep, yeah, I agree.
I picked the crowd chanting, "What?" at Lana. It popped me right at the start, so that was great.
That was a good one. I did like it. With the... But, okay, well... I think that wraps it up for our inaugural episode of PTB NXT. Any parting words, guys?
Well, if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, they can do that at Jenny Position. And check out the feed and check out all the shows we got coming up.
Yeah, I would say I had tremendous fun, as I totally expected to, with this debut episode, and looking forward to doing a lot more because I'm clearly not doing enough podcasts these days. Most of those, Jenny, you've already covered, I think.
Right. It's so funny because, like, when Jake, when you, like, asked me to do the show, it's like, I can't resist it. I can't. Yeah, I love NXT so much that I'm just like, I really, like, I have so many podcasts. And then, I mean, there was just no way I wasn't going to do it. Like, I was just trapped. You trapped me, Jake.
Good. Well, I'm glad you guys signed on to do it, because this was kind of my brainchild. So hopefully, I think it'll get better as we go, especially as we move towards the first takeover, I think. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's interesting, even, like, I think the bad gimmicks are entertaining in a way, too, just to see how that goes. But we'll see how it goes. But thank you guys for hopping on, despite your busy, busy podcast schedules. But anyway, that has been the first episode. So that's it. Maybe we should leave you with a pneumonia.
If you want me to.